Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Allbar Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Allbar.
Good morning across the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. I'm Todd Allbar. It is Thursday, the 30th. of March 2023. Glad to have you along on a Thursday. Mr. Zommers, our producer and engineer, happy Thursday to you, sir.
Happy Thursday to you, too.
Thank you very much. Excited for today's show. Big guest coming up here at quarter after, Dan Kaufman, author of The Fall of Wisconsin. Great book. And he has an article this week in The New Yorker magazine. He is joining us live at quarter after the hour. He has an absolutely bombshell article in terms of content, the way it's written, and information focusing on the Supreme Court race coming up on Tuesday. Title of the article is called A High Stakes Election in the Midwest's Democracy Desert. Democracy Desert, what is that? And why is Wisconsin one of them? We'll be speaking live at quarter after eight this morning with Dan Kaufman, the author of that article, and you will not want to miss it. Great article. You can read it for yourself at newyorker.com or pick up a paper version of the magazine, The New Yorker, coming up here at quarter after 8. Dan Kaufman at 8:30 this morning. We've got Kara Foster from Weatherology. She will fill us in. Lots of weather happening in the northern part of the state around Amory and somewhat in Wausau as well. We'll get a full forecast details for you at the bottom of the hour. Right now, a quick check of those weather forecast details. First of all, at WRCE in Richland Center in southwest Wisconsin. Today, partly sunny in the morning, a chance for rain in the afternoon, a high of 50 degrees. There'll be gusty winds this afternoon as well, 22 miles per hour. Then for tonight, rain chances increasing to 100% as we move towards morning, a low of 48 degrees. And Friday, tomorrow in Richland Center, 100% chance of rain. Make sure you pack your umbrella along tomorrow and a high of 63. Gonna top 60 tomorrow in Richland Center. Up in Wausau, WXCO, Bull Falls Radio for today, partly sunny in the morning, then a chance of rain in the afternoon, a high of 41. For tonight, snow and rain mixed, a low of 31. Tomorrow, rain likely, a high of 43 degrees. And then in Amory, WLAK Land, Lake Air Radio, partly sunny, a chance of rain or snow in the afternoon, a high of 37. For tonight, rain at 100%. Pardon me, for 80% chance for tonight, 31 degrees for a low in Amory. And then for tomorrow, it is going to be rain, freezing rain, breezy. It is going to be a mess in Amory tomorrow and a high of 39 degrees. And then more snow, heavy snow coming in on Friday night in Amory. We will tell you how much and where it's going to be at later on at 8:30 with Kara Foster. So that is your forecast across the state of Wisconsin, at least in our listing areas in western, central, and northern Wisconsin this morning. Quick check of your headlines this morning at 9 minutes past the hour of 8 o'clock. Breaking news this morning with our neighbors to the west, especially here for folks in Amory, you want to take note. A train hauling ethanol derailed this morning in Raymond, Minnesota, igniting several rail cars and forcing nearby residents to evacuate. Preliminary information suggests 14 of the train's 40 cars were carrying hazardous materials, including ethanol, which was released, leading to a fire, according to U.S. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, speaking to CNN this morning. The train was carrying mixed freight, including ethanol and corn syrup, according to Lena Kent, the General Director of Public Affairs for BNSF Railway. Ethanol is a highly flammable chemical. Exposure can lead to coughing, dizziness, the feeling of burning eyes, drowsiness, and unconsciousness. The derailment happened around 1 o'clock this morning, according to the Raymond Fire Department. They posted on Facebook. Homes within half a mile of the derailment were evacuated, according to the county sheriff's office. There were no injuries immediately reported, and railroad personnel are continuing to work with first responders. If you saw the pictures this morning on television out of Minnesota, big fire. Again, this is in Raymond, in Raymond, Minnesota, this morning, just west of the Twin Cities. So perhaps people in the Amory listening area this morning who may commute into the Twin Cities or the western side of the Twin Cities, be aware, avoid the Raymond area of Minnesota this morning. A train derailment carrying ethanol, authorities still on the scene and cleaning it up at this hour. Elsewhere, top stories, what you need to know on a Thursday, the 30th of March, 2023, grief-stricken Nashville residents came together for a citywide vigil yesterday to mourn 3 9-year-old children and 3 adults killed in the mass shooting at a private Christian school. First Lady Jill Biden was also in attendance as community members honored the victims with prayers and songs. As the city struggles to process the tragedy, more details are emerging about how the shooting unfolded. A former police officer who provided active shooter training at the school told CNN that the quick-thinking actions of teachers who locked down classrooms helped save lives. Also credited with saving lives are the officers who rushed into the school and fatally shot the 28-year-old attacker after the 14 minutes of terror. As Russia's Wagner mercenary groups continue to suffer major losses in key areas of Ukraine, Ukraine's defense minister said yesterday that Western tanks will likely be deployed as early as next month. Coming up on the show, stay with us. You're not going to want to miss this. We have Dan Kaufman, that is, offer. Boy, if I could talk, that would really help this morning. Maybe I need more coffee, Mr. Sommers. That's exactly what I need, more coffee. The gentleman's name, our guest, is Dan Kaufman. He is the author of The Fall of Wisconsin and a great article in The New Yorker called The High Stakes Election, The Midwest Democracy Desert. Coming up next, stay with us. This is the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Back to the Todd Allball Show. It is now 15 past the hour of 8 o'clock on the Civic Media Radio Network. Glad to have you along with us on a Thursday, the 30th of March, 2023. It's amazing that I've only lived outside of Wisconsin for about 8-9 months. I was in Florida briefly, but otherwise I've always lived in Wisconsin. But it's amazing when you take the guy out of Wisconsin, you can't take Wisconsin out of the guy. And by request, our first guest, Wisconsin native, Dan Kaufman, requested on Wisconsin. He is the author of The Fall of Wisconsin and also wrote a great article coming up this week in The New Yorker. It is on your newsstands now and online. It's called A High Stakes Election in the Midwest Democracy Desert. Dan Kaufman, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Todd. It's a pleasure to be here. I should just make a small correction. It's only online.
Okay. I'm sorry about that. Yeah.
It's really great to be here and to see you. And we first met in Dale Schultz's farmhouse.
Yes.
I hope you remember. Yes, about a dozen years ago. So it's really nice to see you again.
Well, great to see you again as well. Yeah, it's funny how you go through experiences in life and you don't realize how things are connected. So it is cool. And it was great working for Dale, and you focused on what he did back then. You've written an article today. Before we get into the article, just for those that might not know who you are, haven't read you before, tell folks a little bit about yourself, if you'd be so kind, and what led you to get into journalism and writing.
Sure. Well, I grew up in Madison. My dad was a professor of urban planning at the University of Wisconsin, and I'd had a wonderful childhood there, went to public schools, and I moved to New York in the early 90s and started working first in journalism as a fact checker at The New Yorker. And that's how I really learned about reporting and so on and the skills to do it. And then I really became activated. I was writing some around different subjects, historical subjects, but it was really the Act 10 issue that kind of turned me to writing more. And when I saw Wisconsin become sort of the center of much larger battles that were happening all over the country. And my mother actually had written me an email one night when she was at the state capitol until the wee hours trying to testify in an effort to delay the bill. And that was one strategy that was being used at the time. Mm. And I just became incredibly fascinated both by what was happening then and what the state had been historically, which was really interesting to me. And I knew some, but I didn't really understand the depth of Wisconsin's pioneering tradition, sort of a pragmatic progressivism that was really influential on the country as a whole. This is stuff like workers' comp and the first progressive income tax, where all the money was directed back to local communities. And that was really fascinating to me. So my book kind of weaves together the present and the past to show sort of the tragedy that has happened with this sort of influence of outside influence on the state's politics, particularly dark money and so on. So that's a shorthand. Mm-hmm. And the piece I wrote yesterday, or came out yesterday or Tuesday, is about the Supreme Court election, which I'm sure we'll get to. And the court has been an instrumental kind of actor. Yeah. In this whole effort.
It certainly has. For those that are interested, the name of the book that Dan wrote is called The Fall of Wisconsin. You can order it or see it at The Fall of Wisconsin, all written out, thefallofwisconsin.com, or pick it up wherever you buy books, either online or see it. When I talked about being paper, I'm old enough at 53. I still am the kind of guy who used to go to newsstands and buy everything in paper.
Totally. So I'm 52. I feel the same.
I'm just used to that, you know, so that's why I say those things. You know, I have to get with modern times, but it's great.
It's nice to read in paper.
It really
There's
is.
Also an audiobook if you prefer.
Oh, very good. Well, I wanted to get that out there because I think it's important for listeners to understand the context. You're not, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. Reporters that kind of breeze into Wisconsin with no connection and write things are certainly entitled to that. You can get good reporting from that. But I think it gives an extra sense of credibility and extra sense of understanding someone who is from Wisconsin. Your spouse ends up being from Wisconsin. You get here a lot. And you're someone who spent time on the ground here really researching the history of this state and the political history of this state. So for me, it gives you just an added sense of credibility. I'm someone who loves anything is well written. Don't care if there's a movie, a TV show, a radio show, or in print. And the story that came out in the New Yorker called, again, A High Stakes Election in the Midwest Democracy Desert. The race for control of Wisconsin's Supreme Court could change the course of the entire country. That is the title and the subtitle. It's fantastically written. And what led you to want to write this? What led you to follow this story?
Well, I've been so fascinated. And I think as a reporter, what's exciting is when you gather, you accrue knowledge and you get deeper and deeper knowledge. Because I've been writing not just the book, but many, many articles, including about Dale early on and the battle over the mine. So I felt incredibly versed in many facets of what's happening in the state's politics. And I think the court, this is one of the most fascinating articles I think I've ever read, because I don't think it's really been exposed enough how central the court's role in enabling this whole really minority rule for the past. When you look at the gerrymandering, I think the whole political situation kind of comes out of that. The state is so extreme. It's been called, as the subtitle notes, there's a journalist, wonderful journalist named Dave Daly, who described it as a democracy desert. There's Harvard has done a study in its Electoral Integrity Project comparing, looking at different democratic attributes of the states. And Wisconsin was the lowest, 23, and it was on par with the Democratic Republic of Congo, Jordan, and Bahrain. And that is really telling. And I think what that means is that citizens have no real voice in their government. And you've had Democrats win 14 of the past 17 statewide elections, and they're still remarkably powerless to shape policy. And you can see that in the debates over abortion, for example, where 2/3 of the state thinks that it should be legal in all or most cases, and other issues like that.
Let's define for folks, if we could. Again, David Daly calls this Wisconsin a democracy desert. Explain what that is for folks, please.
Well, I think it just means that, like, the voters themselves, because of the mechanics of the electoral system and gerrymandering and other things, they're very powerless to shape to have their voice as the political will. The majority is thwarted. Another example is Medicaid expansion. Wisconsin is now one of 10 states that doesn't allow it. And it's not because the citizens don't want it. It's because this heavily gerrymandered legislature doesn't want it. And those folks that are elected, their only concern, as you know very well, as Dale's former is largely whether or not they're going to be primaried, because their districts are so safe. They've been drawn to ensure Republicans, where and the Democratic districts have been packed with Democrats, so they might win. Chris Taylor told me, I think, when she was an assembly rep in Madison, you know, she was getting like 80%. Well, that's Madison, but there were some other areas, like, for example, in Eau Claire, Wendy Sue Johnson, it's completely packed. And that area used to be much more mixed. And that's when a you could wind up with a Democratic majority in the Assembly or Senate, in theory. And that's really virtually impossible. It's impossible. And I think that's what Dave Daley is saying. It's a democracy desert because the state, by all intents and purposes, is not a democracy. So
this is a great microcosm of why this article, why this story, why your reporting is so important, because people tune in and hear us, and sometimes I'll go on. We get a couple of callers, we'll go on and on, and we're passionate, right? And so we talk about these things. You know, right now we're inundated in Wisconsin with all these negative ads on both sides, and people don't know what the heck to believe. If you're wanting to know how and why to vote, read this article by Dan, because if I may, here's just a snippet where you say, journalist David Daley calls a democracy desert a place where voters stand little chance of affecting political change. In its most recent biennial report, the Electoral Integrity Project, which measures the democratic attributes of electoral systems, gave Wisconsin's district maps 23 points out of 100, a worst rating of any state in the country. The score is on par with that of the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Yeah, it's really remarkable. And Daley is a great journalist who kind of exposed the Red Map Project, which was endorsed by Karl Rove to sort of for Republicans in swing states to take control of the legislatures in 2010 because of the importance of redistricting that year. And that was Dave Daley's book is called I don't know if I can say it. It's Rat F asterisk asterisk ED.
Thank you for editorializing there. I appreciate that. We are on broadcast radio. That's like a thing, right? Because we have people who do podcasting, and podcasts now you can say whatever the heck you want. And then, you know, it's like, oh, geez, we're on broadcast. So thank you. We appreciate that. But no, I think what you're pointing out here throughout this entire story is not just the political hyperbole, but the real essence of democracy and what is at stake coming up on Tuesday. You begin the article by introducing us to a woman named Mary Lynn Donahue, of all places, Sheboygan. You know, Sheboygan, famous for brats. Doesn't get more Wisconsin than Sheboygan, the polka over there in eastern Wisconsin. Tell us what she introduced you to when you went down to Sheboygan. She gave you a real-life example of unfair maps.
Sure. Sheboygan's a really interesting place. It's the site of also the Kohler Plumbing Supply Company. It's also which had the longest strike in American history from 1954 to 1965. And in the aftermath of that strike, the city itself became very Democratic. It was a labor stronghold. And for decades, it was a reliably, the assembly district was pretty much just the city, and it was reliably Democratic. In 2011, they split the city virtually in two across this one avenue called Superior Avenue. And then they jogged up the lines at one point to capture Mike Ensley's house. Mike had won in an EPSA in 2016. He had won in 2010 and then continued on. So by doing that, they made two Republican districts, both the 26th and 27th. The 27th used to be rural. So it's a very vivid example, maybe one of the most vivid examples of what they call cracking a district. And that was the heart of this very important lawsuit, Whitford versus Gill, in which Mary Lynn was one of the plaintiffs, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court, which sent it back for standing, and then has said the federal courts will not address partisan gerrymandering. You need to take that back to the state courts. And that is why this upcoming election is so crucial and why it's so fiercely contested.
Because they won at the federal level, or they originally won.
Did win, and two of the three judges on the panel were Republican appointees. And it was the most remarkable case. They had a guy named Nick Stephanopoulos at the University of Chicago had figured out how to quantify the degree of gerrymandering, and it was so extreme that this federal court said that the civil rights of Democrats had been violated. constitutional rights.
And when the U.S. Supreme Court basically, you know, threw it out for lack of standing, you write in the article, Donahue said, "I started to cry. You felt a sense of hopelessness." And that's why I think it's so dangerous today, is that if people don't feel there's hope, they don't want to participate. And that's what a lot of people on the right don't want us to do, is participate.
I agree. And I think there's a lot of downstream problems with gerrymandering, like what you say, you know, those things. Yeah.
Pardon me to interrupt. Stay with us. We have to take a commercial break for weather. Come back, talk with more Dan Kaufman and his article. You're not going to want to miss it. More with Dan after this. This is the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Not quite into the end of the third quarter, but we're here at 8:33 on a Thursday morning, the 30th of January, March 2023. Our guest this half hour is Dan Kaufman, author of the book called The Fall of Wisconsin, and a new article in The New Yorker online, and it's called A High Stakes Election in the Midwest Democracy Desert. A great article. We're going to talk with Dan more about that in just a minute, but certainly not a desert. We have another winter storm or early spring storm coming in. We turn to our meteorologist from Weatherology, Miss Kara Foster. I have to get right to it because we have a big guest today, Kara, but we do want to take time to talk about this storm coming in a couple of days, particularly for folks in Amory and Wausau.
Oh, yes, another doozy. It's going to be another two-parter, so I'll get right into it. Basically, today, areas in the very kind of northern portion of the state, I would say, can expect kind of round one. They're under a winter weather advisory. That does start very late tonight. Actually, it's Friday morning, technically. But areas are in the northern and central portions of the state will see some rain and snow showers today. We're reaching a high of 38, so still not bad in Amory. We're reaching a high of 41 in Wausau. They're also going to see that rain and snow showers. And then as we head into Richland Center, they're going to see some rain showers after about 1 p.m. It's going to be very light rain, reach a high of 51. So basically, it's another three-tiered cake, right? Top and central portions of the state will see the rain and snow tonight. Rain and snow showers continue overnight, but actually changing into all rain throughout the entirety of the state, actually. There's actually going to be a chance for some thunderstorms, dip down to 32 in Amory. We're dipping down to 31 in Wausau and then 43 in Richland Center. Now, for tomorrow, there is a winter storm watch for basically the central and northern portions of the state. Same type of thing. They're going to see rain and thunderstorms at the first half of the day. Then it will transfer all into snow in the early evening hours and the overnights over Friday night. I wouldn't expect much accumulation before that time. I would say a lot of areas in the northern portion of the state could see some during the afternoon tomorrow, but mainly in the overnights Friday night is when people who are getting the snow will see that accumulation. Now, the southern portion of the state will still see some snow, but it's only about 1 to 2 inches. Now, the north and central portions are seeing anywhere from 5 to 8 inches in the western portion, and then 4 to 7 in the central and eastern portions. And then in the very northeastern portion of the state, for some reason, is projected to see 6 to 12. It's a very weird specific area. And Friday, in addition to the snow and rain, we are looking at some winds. So we're looking at gusts up to 40 and 50 miles per hour Friday and Friday night. Now, Saturday, we're still going to see some flurries throughout the state, maybe a little rain showers as well, but sunshine will save us. We'll be back in the 30s and 40s on that day, and then sunshine's a nicer day, sunny with our highs in the upper 40s and even upper 50s throughout much of the state. So if you want to plan around anything, I would say Friday night for sure is probably going to be the worst throughout the state, but the rest of the days are going to be kind of hit or miss no matter where you go. Less accumulation, probably no accumulation before that Friday night time. I'm meteorologist Kara Foster.
Thank you, Kara. Rumor has it that this year's 4th of July activities in northern Wisconsin will involve snowboarding. So we're looking forward to that. No, I'm just kidding. It'll melt. It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. All
we
right.
Got it.
Thank you, Kara. Have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks. You as well.
You're welcome. Kara Foster from Weatherology. We appreciate her and appreciate our guest this hour. His name is Dan Kaufman. He is an author of the book called The Fall of Wisconsin and also the author of a great, fantastic article in The New Yorker at newyorker.com called A High Stakes Election in the Midwest Democracy Desert. Dan, we appreciate you being with us. And again, the reason to me why this article is so important is because it cuts through all of the kind of the partisan advertising and just gets to the facts and says, look, folks, here's where it is. And one of the things that, as you know, you were out here in Wisconsin when I worked for former state senator Dale Schultz. I've told this story, and he and his former colleague, Tim Cullen, Democrat from Janesville, they used to go around the state because in their last term together, they tried to get a fair maps coalition together in the vein of Iowa or what Arnold Schwarzenegger did in California. And at the time, Republican Senate leader Scott Fitzgerald wouldn't even allow a public hearing on the bill. And so what Dale and Tim did is they went around the state. And one of the things that just struck a chord, didn't matter whether it was Amory, Wausau, Richland Center, Green Bay, and Madison, when they would bring up this redistricting and they'd explain it and say, look, right now politicians are choosing their voters. Voters aren't choosing their politicians. It would infuriate people. And people would say, well, what can we do? What can we do? The fact is that this race on Tuesday could be the only thing that people can do to bring about fair maps in the state, perhaps for a generation.
I agree with that. It's such a huge issue. And I remember what Tim and Dale were doing, and it was really important because I think it goes against the grain of the state's, a very important tradition in the state of, you know, that was like around clean government, transparency, and a sort of basic honesty that has been uprooted. And I think this election is so key because there is this whole federal lawsuit. It's already, the case is really already there. It's been proven that the only issue was that the US Supreme Court said it's not gonna weigh in. But they actually did criticize partisan gerrymandering in that decision. But they said your only recourse is at the state level. And that is why it's so important for people that are concerned about this issue. There will certainly, I guarantee it, there will be litigation if the composition of the court changes. And Janet Protasiewicz has been outspoken. She's called the maps rigged, and she was unapologetic about that. And I think, you know, her defense is, I heard her say this in Black River Falls when I heard her speak. She says, the truth is my defense. And I think, you know, there are a lot of Republicans, as you mentioned, that weren't for it too. I mean, Charles Franklin has polls up close to 70%, maybe more, are against, want a fair maps, Iowa type situation or something similar. And I think there's just a sense of fatigue. There's some hopelessness like Mary Lynn described. And there's also a pent up hope on mainly on the progressive side that we could finally crack open this hole. It's fine if people win their elections fairly, and the composition of Wisconsin's legislature has gone back and forth for decades until 2011, when it became just static. Didn't matter if Democrats won 53% of the aggregate vote. They were always getting the same amount of seats. It was mathematically cooked. It was baked in. So that's why this election is so key.
I think one of the things that, you know, I was in politics for over 30 years in the state at all different levels. And one of the things that saddens me, but also frustrates me, is what doesn't matter whether it's the issue of reproductive rights for women. When Roe was overturned last year with the Dobbs decision, I saw particularly people in their 20s, right, and 30s on the news outside the Capitol and saying they have, meaning the legislature, they have to listen to us. They can't do this. They have to listen to us. And now we have this situation in Richland Center where the system and the legislature essentially is trying to close down the UW Richland campus. And again, people say they have to listen to us. They're our representatives. And on the face of it, that's exactly right. That's how democracy is supposed to work. But unfortunately, I've seen behind the curtain to know enough. Sadly, they, meaning the elected officials, don't. With the money coming in, with everything else outside, legislators no longer have to listen to their constituents in order to get elected. And a vote on Tuesday, this election, again, could be their only recourse to actually get someone to listen to them and explain why. If Janet Protasiewicz is elected, what could come about to actually bring real change to these maps?
Right, exactly. And you hit on it well, the listening to, and I remember Dale in 2011 telling me, and it's in my book, that he went out to a town hall or a meeting in Spring Green or Richland yep. Center, and you were probably there. And he said it was 500-2 opposed to Act 10. And he really listened. He took that responsibility seriously. That was the same thing with the mine. He went up to the mine. He talked to the tribal leaders. He was like an old school Wisconsin politician that respected the views of his constituents, not the views of donors, wealthy donors, and a lot of which was coming from out of state. And that was the difference. And that is why he voted against Act 10 and against the mine, because it didn't make sense. And the people didn't want it. You know, it was being superimposed upon them. And I think that is really, there's so many issues in Wisconsin that have gone like that over the past decade. The so-called right to work law, you know, you had a powerful coalition of Republican businessmen opposing it, mm-hmm. but that wasn't even enough to stop the bill. The out-of-state money was more important and so on. And it was a really big fight and a really interesting fight, because even the local donors were no longer enough to change the course of that bill.
There's a couple examples of this article. I just want to go through them quickly. One here, when the state court, recently ruled that Fred Prehn, a Walker appointee to the Department of Natural Resources, reading out of your article now in the New Yorker, could stay on after his term expired in May of 2021 until his replacement was confirmed. Here's the arrogance. This is a great quote you included in the article. A little coarse, but I don't care. This is what Prehn said to one of the DNR agents that was subpoenaed. He said, quote, "I'll be like a turd in water up there." I mean, I thought that was, I mean, just the arrogance of it. I mean, they knew on the right side, but they don't care, or the wrong side, but they don't care.
Exactly. And the only, he coordinated this. These text messages came out in a lawsuit by the open records request by the Midwest environmental advocates. Mm-hmm. And he's texting with Walker, with Republican legislators, with industry lobbyists from Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. And they just, the whole goal is simply to try to wait until after the election in the hope that Rebecca Clayfish would win. And he had that, it sounds, some of it's kind of funny, but it actually had a lot of consequences, because he voted a deciding vote to not allow for groundwater standards for PFAS, which is really devastating the community of Peshtigo near Marinette. And that has really impacted them. And, you know, he had no right to be on it. It's a kick in the gut for good government, which used to be a bipartisan concern, you know, and the DNR was one of the models of the states. You had the best scientists, and it was science driven. And now it's really kind of industry driven in a lot of ways, which is why you have these groups like Green Fire, these dissident scientists that have come out to criticize the DNR. For example, when they banned the words climate change on their website, that was an example of what this is.
Another example, and again, reading from Dan Kaufman's article in The New Yorker, says, following the 2020 presidential election, Wisconsin was the only state in the country whose Supreme Court held a hearing on election challenges filed by Donald Trump. Joe Biden won the state by nearly 21,000 votes. Trump's lawyer, Jim Troupas, there's a name we hear a lot, asked for the results from the state's two most populous and most Democratic counties to be thrown out. And then jumping down, 2 years later, a court outlawed drop boxes. In that case, Rebecca Bradley, writing for the majority, compared Wisconsin's 2020 contest to elections conducted by Bashar al-Assad, Kim Jong-il, and other despots. Quote, throughout history, tyrants have claimed electoral victory via elections conducted in violation of governing the law, she wrote. For example, Saddam Hussein was reportedly elected in 2002 by unanimous vote of all eligible voters in Iraq. Do people understand that folks on the conservative side here are trying to bastardize our elections and compare them to things happening in Iraq and in despot countries, and which simply is not true? These are lies.
Yeah. And I wrote a piece last summer about the attacks on the Election Commission and other clerks. And frankly, it got very terrifying for them. There was really credible death threats against the head of the Milwaukee Elections Commission, Claire Woodall Vaug. And, you know, she was, the FBI was investigating, and she had to leave town for a couple of weeks. And it was all fabrications. It was actually, they ran incredible elections across the state. and during a really challenging period for the country, you know, the pandemic.
Former Governor Scott Walker, again, you write this piece in The New Yorker. They know this is, they know how big the stakes are. He told the National Review, quote, everything is on the line in this election. Quote, this is their chance to undo everything we've done for the past dozen years. That's coming from Scott Walker. They, and why would you, Dan, the only reason to be nervous, right, is that you know that what you did is on legally very shaky ground.
Legally, and also in terms of its popularity.
Right.
I mean, if they really left it up to the voters, they would, there would be abortion rights in the states. There would be Medicaid and so on.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a question of democracy meaning having true meaning.
Stay with us. We're going to have one more quick segment with Dan, if he'd be so kind. Dan Kaufman, back after this. This is the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show. It is now 8:50 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Coming up at the top of the hour, a news and weather update for you. Our guest this hour, Dan Kaufman, author of The Fall of Wisconsin, and also the author of a great, fantastic, important article in The New Yorker, out online now, called A High-Stakes Election in the Midwest Democracy Desert. We have a link to it up on our website, on Civic Media, also on our Twitter and Facebook accounts as well. Music by request there, Dan. You're actually a musician yourself in your free time, right?
I am a musician, and this was my favorite band growing up. The Appliances SFB, remarkable Madison group that just really kind of, you know, there's those bands that really alter your consciousness. And for us, they were them, and they were incredible live, too. We used to see them at OK's Corral.
Really?
Many, many times. Yeah.
That's fantastic. An author with a Wisconsin connection who knows what's up in the Madison area.
What do you play?
Yeah. What do you, everyone wants to know, what do you play?
I play guitar and I'll be in Madison actually playing a gig.
Really?
May 11th.
May 11th.
I'll send you.
Please do.
What's that?
Please do send it to, send me the info.
Yeah,
We'll plug it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a duo with my drummer. I have a larger project, but this is just the two of us. It's kind of a side project.
That's
it's
fantastic.
John and Dan.
Say it again.
John and Dan.
Perfect. Perfect.
Kind of deliberately, sort of.
Kind of low key.
Yeah.
Very good. Awesome. Well, we'll look forward to that. A man of many talents here, not the least of which is a great reporter and a great author. In this article, again, a high stakes election in the Midwest democracy desert in the New Yorker. You mentioned a guest that's on our airwaves frequently on Pat Kreitler's show, Up North News, Dr. Kristen Lyerly. She is an OBGYN who lives in Green Bay. And there's a great section there, and I encourage readers to look into it and to read it, on the whole abortion issue and access to women's reproductive rights. And I would like to go into that, but just out of the essence of time, I want to leave something for people to read on their own in the article. But I want to focus a little bit on Dan Kelly, the conservative candidate, because again, people can listen in and say, well, Todd, you're a disgruntled former Republican or the ads, you don't know what to believe. Here's a guy, our reporter, our guest, Dan Kaufman, who's looked into the facts. Tell us a little bit about what you uncovered. You spent a little bit of time with him on the campaign trail. What's your takeaway from Dan Kelly?
I spent a little time following him. He wouldn't consent to an interview with me, but I did go to a couple of campaign events. And then in researching his background, I mean, he's a very religiously minded person. He moved to Wisconsin from suburban Denver in the late 80s to attend Carroll College, a small Christian college. And then he went to the Pat Robertson Law School in 1988, which at the time was completely unaccredited. It did receive a provisional accreditation by the time Kelly graduated. But while he was there, he wrote in the Regent Law Review, in the inaugural issue, he wrote the opening essay. And it really talks about how, for him, God is the center of the law. It is it's rooted in that. And of course, he then moved on into being very active in the Federalist Society, in the Milwaukee chapter. And he was on the advisory board of WIL, the Wisconsin Institute of Law and Liberty, which is the city's most prominent sort of right-wing libertarian think tank that has brought many of the lawsuits before the court that have altered the state. around voting issues or Act 10 or other things. And Kelly is really part of this network. And, you know, Dick Uihlein, the head of Uihlein, is funding him enormously. I mean, he's really pumping millions and millions of dollars into this race. A source told me when I was reporting, you know, he was kind of exaggerating for effect, but that Dick Uihlein is the Wisconsin Republican Party now. I mean, there's other actors, Diane Hendricks and so on, but a lot of the funding, he gave Ron Johnson more than $6 million and so on. So that's really where Kelly's situated. Yet he argues often in the language of textualism and originalism. By that, I mean, it's a right-wing sort of legal philosophy that argues that everything can just be read in the text itself, originalism. And the textualism is sort of a variation of it, that you only have to read the text itself to understand what it means. I find that kind of crazy because every single person has a different interpretation, even on the right. And there's a wonderful line that I didn't include in the piece, but by William Brennan, the former Supreme Court justice, who described this general philosophy as arrogance cloaked as humility. Wow. And I think that's true. It's the idea that, oh, I'm not doing anything but just reading the literal words. Well, we don't live in a world like in 1849 where women couldn't vote for the next 70 years, or that didn't know that germs caused disease. And there were tons of subsequent laws passed afterwards regulating abortion, which is the argument in the attorney general's suit. Now, I think that Kelly has said in the debate, he's criticized Protasiewicz for being more outspoken about her beliefs around the maps, around abortion. But I mean, it's clear as day where Kelly is situated. In fact, he's criticized Judge Hagedorn for being supremely unreliable. I'm not sure. And he says that's to the Constitution. But that's like reading the Bible and saying that you can only have one interpretation. Everybody has a different interpretation. And I think if you're trying to be a good judge, you can recognize your ideologies and biases, but still, I think, act in a way that is trying to look at the facts and try to interpret the law for the world that we live in, the ones that people are experiencing, rather than, you know, depending on what we have no idea what happened in 1849. Mm-hmm. And I can't see personally the relevance of that as far as how that should impact Wisconsin women today.
We're going to carry this over for our listeners. We're going to be taking calls next hour. We're going to be going through some more of these quotes in Dan Kaufman's article in The New Yorker. But Dan, for this hour, I'm going to give you the last word, about a minute and a half left. What are your biggest takeaways? What would you like voters to understand, the biggest overall story as they prepare to go to the polls on Tuesday?
I think just to understand that the stakes of this election really do will really determine Wisconsin's democracy and democratic lowercase d principles and its ability to honor the will of the people. I also think it has tremendous import for the rest of the country in terms of what happens here, both because it's arguably the most pivotal swing state in the country, and also because it sort of becomes a laboratory. It will resonate outward. And this election, I'm not the only one to say it, The New Yorker, The New York Times, it is the most important election this year by far. And it will have consequences for years and years to come. So I just encourage everyone to read the piece, look at the facts, and go out there and vote.
Dan Kaufman, author of the Yorker article, A High Stakes Election in the Midwest Democracy Desert. Thank you very much for your time today. Thank you for your work. We appreciate you very much. You're welcome with this program anytime.
Thank you, Todd. It's been really a pleasure. It's so nice to see you again after all these years.
You as well. And we'll check you out when you're in town playing a guitar. We can't wait.
Please do. May 11th. Yeah.
Sounds good. Stay with us, folks. We're going to go through Dan's article a little bit more next hour. Take your calls as well. This is the Todd Allball Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.